Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of the 9 Years Podcast Lockdown Show, if that's what we're calling it. We still haven't decided, but it's not the drive time show because it's not drive time anymore, and you're not driving, and it's not live. So anyway, thank you for listening. Yesterday's show, interesting stuff from Will Nightingale, proving what a nice bloke he is, and a great guest to have on. Today, we have two completely different guests. We've not got players on today. We have, instead, Jane Lonsdale from the Don's Trust Board. Jane Lonsdale, MBE. I'm sorry, I should have added all those.
Just about to correct you there, Kevin.
No.
Please stop.
I'm so sorry. So,
please,
Jane.
Stop.
Okay. Anyway.
Mom Lonsdale.
Sir Jane Lonsdale has joined us on the Don's Trust Board. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
How are you doing in these bizarre times? Are you furloughed or are you going into work these days?
No, I'm more busy than I've ever been with work. So I work for the Treasury, so we've just done all the economic packages to support Britain's business and people and their budget. And so within 2 weeks and 2 days, we've done a budget and three statements. So it's been rather busy.
From home?
So I was in work until I've lost track of time and what day it is, as has the rest of the world.
Tuesday the 7th.
I was in work, 2 weeks last Thursday, and then I'm going in once a week because we're running daily quite big meetings that we're going
on. Yeah.
So we're taking it in turns between us. So I haven't been in this week yet, and at the moment there's not a need for me to go in. So if I have to go in, then I do, but I'm trying to stay at home as much as I can.
Understandably. So we'll talk off air because I don't qualify for any of these packages at the moment. I've fallen through the cracks. Anyway, we'll discuss that. So anyway, well, thanks for taking the time out of your particularly busy time. So I'm sure most of our listeners know who you are, but you've been on the Don's Trust Board for how long now? This is your second term.
Oh my goodness. December 2013, I was elected to the board. So somebody did that. 7 years.
Yeah. So I had the pleasure of interviewing you on the last Don's Trust hustings that we did for the 9 Years podcast. And there's not many things that are certain in life, I don't think. But people were sort of saying, I wonder who's going to get on. And it was all kind of a fun thing. Lots of people were discussing who was going to get on. Everybody pretty much knew you were going to get on. It was the most obvious thing you were going to win, which is a nice thing for you. But what do you think you bring to the Don's Trust Board then that makes you're kind of just universally popular? I'm not trying to be overly pleasant to you because I can see you, but it's just you've got a huge amount of support. You've got masses of votes, huge percentage. So what do you think your secret is then?
So first up, I should say that I actually didn't think that it was a conclusion that I would be re-elected to the board. No, not at all. I think everybody who stood this year brought something a bit different, and there'd been a huge changeover in 2018. So I wasn't. I don't think you can ever rest on your laurels. Is the wrong phrase, but I don't think you can ever just assume that you're going to get back on and not everybody voted for me, from the numbers that voted, not everybody voted for, so there's, and that's absolutely fine because that's the whole point of having an election. But what do I bring? So I think what I bring, I'm very happy to be on the front line doing whatever is needed to be done. Whether that's talking and I also, I have a season ticket in the main stand. I go with my family. I stand outside the back bar and talk to people. I'm in the main bar after every game because I quite enjoy watching Man of the Match and people know that I'm there. Happy to do my turn in the kiosk. So I think I'm quite available and I get quite a lot of emails from people. I don't know why. People feel that they can come and talk to me about stuff that's bothering them, and I can filter it into a way that is then presentable. If somebody's having a bit of a rant, then I won't go and rant at the board, but we can have a this is what I'm hearing. And I know when we've let's take the example of where just before Neil Ardley left the club, there was quite a lot of unrest within the fan base. And I remember being in a board meeting and, you know, being told that what I was hearing was just one element of the fan base and that I needed to get further out and speak to other fans and stuff. And I took the decision to go and stand directly behind the goal at, was it Haringey, the game? The horrific.
Yeah, his last game.
And I literally went and stood. I don't normally stand directly behind the goal. I normally sat in a seat. And that said to me, actually, what I'm hearing is amplified even more, you know, with the people that were behind the goal that particular game. And it did get a little bit unpleasant, but, you know, people's ultimately it's about their passion for the club. And so being able to hear that and filter it in a way that is, you know, board level responsibility, that's, you know, that's fine.
I think maybe it's that. Yeah. Well, I think what you bring, Bo, if I may say, is calm authority. I've seen people in the kiosk. But yeah, I've seen people in the kiosk kind of getting quite irate, not with you, but with the club, and you just kind of take it and give back a great answer that puts them, kind of just knocks them back a bit. I don't know how you do that. But what I should have done before, though, was, this is not just me on the show, of course, the usual conspirators, Nick and Stu.
We did want to say, Kevin.
Tuesdays, I apologise, but I'll walk straight into the guest. So I'm also joined by Mr. Chris Draper.
Good afternoon, or evening, or morning, or whatever time you're listening to.
Yes. Hello, we'll probably cover that. And of course, the perennial George Jones, the omnipotent George Jones. How are you doing, George?
Hello, I'm good. You?
Yes, I'm absolutely fine. But that's nice that you've judged yourself. But anyway,
so. The backable Kevin Jones.
Yes, it does indeed. I should have done that, but I wanted to get straight into talking with Jane. Anyway, so we're all here.
Leave you two alone. I mean, that's fine.
No, it's fine. The show is now an hour. We've got some games to play. We've got a second guest is coming on shortly. He's James Oliver Pearce, who is one of the under 16 coaches. We're going to be talking to him about how he's helping. I mean, it's bad enough for us adults dealing with this. But James obviously dealing with kids and having to explain to 15-year-olds what the hell's going on. I mean, their parents are doing it, but obviously the kids look up to the coaches as kind of like some sort of parental figure as well. So, Jane, I know you don't want to mention your MBE, but I'm going to. So, Jane recently received an MBE for her services to the volunteering sector, which you've been doing for a long, long time. I'm not going to name ages and years and stuff. But, congratulations publicly for that.
Oh, yes.
Now, you've got your MBE from Prince Charles. Luckily, you're okay. He obviously was ill afterwards. So what did that mean to you? Obviously, it's a huge thing. But when you find out you're actually getting an award from the royal family for doing something you love doing, how does it feel? So I've never had an award in my life.
So I'm a little bit embarrassed by it, if I'm brutally honest. And there was a whole text exchange just before George put out the tweet saying that I was on it, because people will spot that I don't use it at all. I don't put it against my name at all. I prefer not to have it. I don't do the things I do for that kind of recognition. Of course, it's lovely. But that's not what motivates me to do it. And I don't feel that I don't put the letters after my name ever. It wasn't just for volunteering, actually. It's primarily for my day job. It's primarily for 30 plus years of public service. But with a whole load of volunteering as well, it's very unusual for you to get something just for your job in this day and age, as far as honours are concerned. So
try telling that to members of parliament.
Well, and so therein lies some of the my thought process around honours, and those that are close to me will know that when I found out that I had been nominated and was being offered the opportunity to accept an honour, which is how it works, I did struggle quite a bit about whether to accept it or not, because how can I put this politely, and perhaps I don't try.
Put it however you want. This is not a professional podcast.
As Chris said, there's, you know, you look down the list and you go, really? Really?
Yeah.
some of the names. And so yeah. that was some of the issue that I had a very, shall we say, heated conversation when you said about being calm and all the rest of it earlier. There was a pretty heated conversation with my husband, Richard, who said, you're seriously thinking about not taking this. And I was like, well, you know, it's all a little bit. And he was like, well, you can explain it to your mother. And
wow,
it was at that moment that I thought, yeah, actually, it's not necessarily just about me. It's about the support and help. And, you know, I'm very lucky to have really supportive parents and family. And it's actually not just about me. It's about everybody else as well.
Yeah. But you can turn it down. I know John Lennon.
You can turn it down. Yeah. And actually, there's quite a reputable list of people who have turned it down.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you are. The wording on the letter is very, very officious and very, as you would imagine, you know, very, very yeah. formal. And it says something like the Prime Minister wants the opportunity to recommend you to the royal household to be recognised for an honour.
Okay.
And you have to declare whether you are in acceptance of that or not.
Okay.
Not quite the words in, but it's something like that. It's very, right, very vicious. It took me about 3 times to read the sentence to understand what it was meant.
And you'll still be reading it now, to be fair.
Yeah. I'll dig it out and read it for you properly.
I'd have missed the cutoff date. I wouldn't have got there in time, I don't think.
Yeah.
Could I have the dumbed down version, please? I don't understand the letter.
Yeah. If you could just put it in plain English.
Just tick yes or no. 2 boxes. Easy.
Yes.
Yeah, go on then, why not?
But and the day the letter arrived, it was back in, so I got it, I got the letter back in November last year, and it was a very, very officious looking letter, you know, on Her Majesty's service, immediate, and it arrived on a Saturday morning, and I was still in bed, and Richard brought it up to me and said, have you been sacked? What have you done? Because it looked like kind of that very, very officious looking letter.
Yeah. You've been called up to be a spy.
Yeah.
So the other thing I'm dominating the conversation here, but this, our club is lauded for its community efforts. Obviously what the club's doing now with the local action group for the vulnerable people with the food collection stuff is fantastic. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But obviously one of your things is community work. Is that's what's dear to your heart, and that is where the club lies. So is this like the perfect marriage for you? And I'm saying it not your with Richard isn't, but of your interests, obviously of volunteering, community work, and a football club that prides itself on its community efforts. It kind of, it works perfectly, doesn't it?
It's the community element of the football club is just phenomenal, and it matters to me an awful lot. The whole ethos of how we are and who we are and the volunteering side of that is a massive part of what is right about our football club to me. You know, I often hear that we don't have, you know, we're losing volunteers and, you know, we don't get any volunteers and the numbers of volunteers are dropping. I don't see that at all. And whenever I hear that, I challenge it a little bit, because every time I've put out an advert for volunteers, I've managed to get volunteers without a problem, whether that's for the Junior Dons or the Diversity and Inclusion Working Group or, you know, people stuffing envelopes or whatever it might be. The cohort of volunteers is vast in diversity and age.
Yeah.
You know, I had one of the youngest volunteers who was 15 at the time he started volunteering, and I had to do all kinds of safeguarding issues around him to protect her, you know, because he was a minor. So I had to have DBS checks and all the rest of it and make sure that he was never on his own. And whenever we emailed him, we emailed his parents as well. And all of those kind of things that you do to safeguard yourself and the individual. And we've got a whole load of, you know, volunteers through every age range, you know, all genders, all ethnic backgrounds, and it is just phenomenal to see though that come together in that way, and how it works. And
yeah,
you know, and you just mentioned the Donslow Collection Group. I mean, that's 250 of them. It's phenomenal. Mm. It's just, and it just, it puts, it puts the football club in a different light to people. You know, I remember when we were getting the planning permission for the new stadium and we did the presentations in the local community, and, you know, I fronted up a couple of those and had some very, very difficult conversations with some local residents who just saw football fans as hooligans and used that word. You know, you're all hooligans, you all carry knives. And it was just the most bizarre conversation. And then I see what's going, what I actually know goes on within our football club. You know, I've taken my son since he was 7 days old, and I don't see that at all. I see a community that is embracing and helping and supporting the wider community that's beyond football.
Yeah.
Football's just the 90 minutes on the pitch, and it's way beyond all of that.
Yeah, you're right about the action group. When the action group first sort of sprung up, and there was, Facebook was full of people saying, I'll do it. I've been furloughed. I want something to do. I want to help. Yep. Extraordinary. I mean, the amount of volunteers we have that do things on a regular basis compared to the size of our fan base is incredible.
It's phenomenal.
They don't get any more, and they've got, you know, 20 times more fans. It's extraordinary.
And don't ever think that we... I went down to the Donslow Collection Group at the weekend. I dropped some stuff off down there. I was having a chat with Xavier. And I said to him, you know, don't ever underestimate what we've got within our fan base, because, you know, I remember advertising for the Junior Dons volunteers and asking for somebody to do the stadium tours, and got some guy who's a qualified tour guide. Well, who knew that we had a qualified tour guide in our fan base?
Yeah.
And when I was talking to Zav about it, he said a name, and I went, no, that's not him. Oh, we've got two qualified tour guides in our fan base, you know. And it's just a little bit bizarre. We forget that we're not just football fans, that we're professional people in our daily lives, and we should be tapping into that way more than we do.
And every now and again, that becomes useful, obviously, with all our jobs.
Massively.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it doesn't. Obviously, you've got people in marketing, journalism, policemen, teachers, you know, filmmakers, and we're all... The one thing that brings us together is that 90 minutes on us, occasionally on a Saturday.
That near suicidal feeling we get every week.
Yes, we know the one.
Yeah, if it was just about the football, we wouldn't all be here, would we? Let's be honest. I mean, you know...
It's part of it. I mean, again, I sound like I'm making too much of it, but the whole mental health thing. Everyone goes through bad times, and I know people. I've had them myself, where you get through a week, and you've had a really bad week. Things have gone on in your private life, or gone on at work, or got financial problems, or whatever. That Saturday afternoon route or Saturday morning routine. We have the same breakfast on a Saturday morning because it's lucky. You know, you lose every other game, but you still think it's lucky. You watch football focus or whatever. And you go and drive off. You drive off to pick your mate up and go to the game. You talk about stuff. That routine just gets you through the rest of the week. And that's what I think people are going to struggle with, not having that at the beginning.
Well, without going into too much detail, we've had a couple of emails and calls in the last couple of weeks as Don's Trust Board members, where there are members of our fan base who are really, really struggling.
Yes.
And other fans have been looking out for them and contacting us, saying, you know, we couldn't contact this particular person. And you know, one of the board members went and knocked on the door and made sure they was okay. And that it's that kind of thing that makes you realise this is what we have is way more than just the 90 minutes on a Saturday.
It's about
the camaraderie and the friendships and the support off the pitch is way as important, and particularly at a time like this where everybody's stuck indoors, and you know, the stuff you're doing with the podcast is just another way of reaching out to people and providing them with something else to think about and do.
Yeah, I think the social side is getting bigger. I mean, obviously we spoke to Glyn Hodges on Thursday, and he'd just come off the phone to a supporter in his 70s who didn't have, hasn't got family, and just had an half-hour chat about his playing career. But you look we've done that, but you look at other clubs. I think Everton did it. Carlo Ancelotti was ringing people. Duncan Ferguson, just today, someone has gone onto Facebook and said that this guy's uncle is disabled, can't get out of the house anyway. He's had his TV stolen from his house during the lockdown. Mm. Everton found out about it. Duncan Ferguson rang him, said, don't worry, we'll sort you out. And Duncan Ferguson, from his own pocket, has bought this guy an enormous great TV for his house. Now, he can afford it. It's not the point. It's a nice thing to
do. But it doesn't have to do it. Do you know what I mean? It has done it. That's the point. He's done it. And that we're hearing those kind of stories time and time again. You know, I was talking to Xavier and the Donslow Collection Group. They phoned one of the fans. The foundation were phoning fans, and there was a gentleman who couldn't get in touch with his family, or there was something. Anyway, what he needed was a device, a mobile device, or So they've got him, an old iPad. They've loaded it all up with Zoom and everything else. They've instructed him how to use it from the street to the window. So he can now, he's now got an alternative way out rather than just looking at four walls all the time.
Nice. Brilliant. People are generally nice, aren't they? Let's be fair. The bottom line, most people are mostly nice. It's massively improved. So we're going to talk about a diversity group in a minute, but it's time for a game. Now, I don't know if you've listened to any of the other shows, George and games are not easy bedfellows because George does like to add his own little twist, doesn't he, Chris?
West Ham
or Kidderminster. So, George, in a simple way as possible, for those also listening who may not have heard this game before, Paul Os Who. It's a game which you need to guess, Jane, the identity of a footballer. George, please give all the rules and regulations.
Okay, so it's going to be either a current or former AFC Wimbledon player. The first round of clues will be five players this person has played with, but not necessarily at Wimbledon.
Yep,
the second round of clues will be two managers he's played under. And then the final clue will be two that will really help you get it if you haven't already.
Are we doing this all in one go? Or are we dotting it through the show?
So I might need some help because I'm rubbish with players, literally rubbish.
Yeah. Let me point this out, that of all of us, only George knows the answer. Chris and I do not know the answer to this question. So we'll all
not play. A clue.
George, please give the... So George will now read out five footballers player has played with at some point. Yes?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, go for it, George.
Okay, the five players are Adam Barrett, George Long, Luke O'Neill, George Moncur, and Ben Purrington.
Oh.
Adam Barrett, George Long, George Moncur, Ben Purrington. Who was the other one?
Luke O'Neill.
Like I sound like I know what I'm doing. I haven't got a clue.
You're all right. We're all in the same boat, Jake. Don't worry about it.
Now you know how we all feel.
I'm an elf.
So, I'm going to have a guess, but I'll wait for Jane to have her guess.
Oh, yeah,
I've got a guess as well.
They have to have played with these players. Yeah. I confess I'm getting some help.
No, the voice in the background is Ben's husband, Richard.
No, Will, no. My eldest.
It's also son, Will. I'm sorry. I saw Richard walk behind you on the video there.
We're not from Norwich, Kevin.
Oh, well. He's playing with one of our players.
Yeah.
It could take a while.
Yeah, current
doing the
or
full analysis.
Yeah, the answer is current or former AFC Wimbledon.
Current or former AFC Wimbledon players.
Yeah. We're leaning on the former here.
Yes, I'm trying to help everyone.
It's not going to be relevant right now.
The players have played for these teams that they've played for.
Lyle Taylor is my guess. Given me the most filthiest look going, so I'm assuming that's wrong. But I'm just going with a name that I know.
Chris?
Well, I was going to go for something simple like Barry Fuller.
Okay.
Because of the Gillingham connection.
Right. I'm going to pluck one out of the air because I think there's a link here with... Oh, no, maybe not. All right, I'm going to guess Toby Sibbick.
Well, people who have got this right in the first round in the past include Rob Tovey and Glenn Hodges. The correct answer is Lyle Taylor.
Get off!
Lyle Taylor.
What?
It was like...
What, Lyle Taylor?
Yeah, but I literally just guessed the name of a player.
Where did Lyle play with George Moncur?
Okay, so Lyle Taylor played with...
Tell Will to stop justifying it. You've got it right, Jane.
Yeah, they're now arguing about how it possibly could be that. Go on, George, tell us.
Lyle Taylor played with Adam Barrett on loan at Bournemouth, George Long at Sheffield United, Luke O'Neill at Scunthorpe. He was at part of Thistle the same time as George Moncur.
Oh.
And obviously he's at Charlton with Ben Burrington.
I've forgotten that George Moncur played in Scotland.
What was the Scotland one, George?
George Moncur was at Partick Thistle the same time
Partick
as Lyle.
Thistle. Ah. Well, there you go. I mean, you know.
So what was the clue going to be, George?
The clue was going to be that he scored over 50 goals for us in all competitions.
I'm probably going to say something about his Stu Deacon's Tinder date.
At which point I would have probably said... what was the other guy's name? Kevin Cooper, if you'd said that.
Who was the two...
managerial clues were going to be Eddie Howe and Mark Robbins.
So, Bournemouth and Scunthorpe?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, that's a good one. So, Jane joins a very, very small number of people who've got that right first round.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go.
I guess.
You did yourself down, James. You got it right first time. Has James Oliver Pearce joined us?
Yes, James Oliver Pearce has joined the room.
We can see him. This makes great radio. We can see James, but we can't hear him yet. James, can you hear us?
Watching in black and white.
James can't hear us either. Okay.
Okay.
Don't touch your face. You can't do it anymore.
Okay.
Okay.
Continue the show. I'll try and work out this.
So, do we have a song though? Are we doing the song thing?
We don't have a song lined up.
Oh, thank God for that.
It's going to be our intro music.
Okay, fine. That's all right then. So, shall we just talk before while James gets sort of into the program? Shall we talk about diversity?
Sure
Yes.
So we'll talk diversity, not the dance group. But we're going to talk about the diversity group within the club. Jane, can we talk about that? About, obviously, we're looking at diversity of all kinds, or whether it's disabled people or whether it's people of mixed backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds. It's a big thing for the club to have that kind of diverse aspect to it.
Yeah, there's lots of protected characteristics is what the formal word is for the disabled, and there's 9 protected characteristics across the spectrum, and we have been doing I can't remember when I set it up, but it was a few years ago. Mandy Bynan in the club is the club's diversity inclusion officer, and we have, as part of our EFL status, we have to meet certain criteria. There's an equality census done every year, and there's certain markings, and we got out of 12 last year, we got green on 10 and amber on 2. So we're actually doing really well, but it's not about meeting a certain criteria. It's about being an inclusive club I focus more on inclusivity rather than diversity, and it's about making everybody feel welcome and safe, and that we're reaching out to. It links to the community stuff we were talking about earlier on, and so for me that's really important. I've done sort of specific bits of work. So we've always been really lucky that we've always had a woman on the board for the Don's Trust, going back as far as Luke Hart and Kelly, and sadly departed Geraldine Missenbird, Aideen Rochford, Zoe Linkson. We've had lots of women on the board. At the moment, from a parity point of view, we've got 4 women on the board and 5 men, which is just phenomenal for a football club environment. That is unheard of. It's really important to me that we represent the fan base. What you look at on the terraces needs to be replicated within the boardroom, but also at higher levels within the club, and make sure that all of those voices are heard.
The one thing I had someone I was talking to, not from the club, was saying that looking at the Don's Trust board and the club board, that it is white people. Okay, that's a fact. You can't make people from different backgrounds apply for things. But is there any concerted efforts you're going to look at maybe to try and get people from different ethnic backgrounds to apply for positions within the club, or is it just that's naturally how it falls?
So it's really difficult in an election environment, because ultimately the members decide who they want on the board by voting for people, but you've got to encourage a more diverse cohort of people to stand for election. You know, we have had BAME diversity on the board before. We've had Moira Chowdhury. We've got certainly some within the Diversity and Inclusion Board. And we, you know, we recently did the outreach with the for the women at the game with the Asian community women that came to the game. So we do, that is important. It's absolutely important, particularly at a time where we're moving to Plough Lane, where there's a different community cohort of diversity around the stadium. And if we're wanting to bring in more people, then we should, you know, reach out to those communities. But so, yeah, it is important that we work in, you know, we go out and work in those areas.
Yeah, sure. Okay, but without forcing us, that's the other issue. It's difficult, isn't it? So James has joined us. James Oliver Pearce has joined us. Hi, James, how are you doing?
Hi, Kevin, how are you?
We're good, thank you. We're joined by Chris and George as well, and Jane Lonsdale's course with us. How are you? How's it going for you? Now, James is one of the under-16s coaches. We're going to talk about how you got into the club at the moment, but what's it like for you at the moment? Well, obviously, you'd be coming towards the end of the season with the under-16s. You're dealing with 15 and 16-year-old boys, which I can, having had two of those at some point in my life, not a easy thing. So how are you dealing with them now? How are you contacting them, and how are you helping them to cope? Because I said before you came on, they must see you as some kind of parental figure as well, and it must be difficult for you to sort of usher them through this as not being their parent.
Yeah, well, my role is actually to look after the 13s to 16s. I manage the 15s and 16s as an age group, but I oversee the 13s and 14s development program as well.
Yeah.
We're really fortunate. We've got a really tight knit set of staff and a really creative group of staff as well that are really going above and beyond the rest for what the boys need. There's been technical skills challenges. We had a couple of first team players congratulate the winners on the their skill challenge. It was every player from 13 to 16 competing. We've had an 18 Zoom meeting like this today. We've had a 13s to 16 Zoom meeting and a 9s to 12 Zoom meeting. We're primarily focused on video analysis and helping them clip and edit today so that they can go away and do a case study on a player that they base their skill set on and a player that they look up to. We've had cooking workshops. So the boys have done a cooking tutorial on how to make them. That's every Tuesday and Friday the boys are getting that, because we do believe we've got a duty of care. We want to make sure they've still got a development program despite the fact that we can't get them on the grass. The results have been fantastic. I'd be more than happy to share some of the stuff that they've been doing in their own time. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah, please do. I mean, it's if you knew this was going to happen, you could plan for looking after your players. But this is like just obviously struck all of us. It must be an extraordinary thing to have to do. And when it's totally out of the blue, and all of a sudden you've got all these, you know, vast numbers of kids who can't play football, and it's your job to help them through it. It must be really hard to know what to do.
I've listened to Rob and Robbo's interview on here in the last week or so. And they talked as well about our self-managing athlete program, and this is where we believe where if we're doing what we say we're doing and we think we're doing well, then the boys should be able to manage themselves in this period with coach guidance as opposed to being just solely instructed. So we feel that we're definitely that program has definitely been working.
Good. So I'm going to ask you a question about other than what we're doing now. So what makes a Wimbledon player for you? Because obviously Wimbledon fans, I've been a Wimbledon fan for 42 years now, and you kind of see when new players come into the club or whether you've got the people come up from the academy, you can tell almost straight away that they are the right kind of person rather than the right kind of player. So from the age of 13, how do you recognise a 13-year-old? Is it purely on skill, or if you've got the choice of two players on a similar ability, you go a bit on their personality or on their parents or their background? How does that work?
We dig a little bit deeper with everyone. A player's got to have ability first and foremost, but the longer you do this, you see that if they haven't got the mentality and the mindset to do the extra bits that surround it, then they're going to come up short somewhere. For me, a Wimbledon player is all about hard work, passion, desire, and then when they're on the ball, can they show quality to be creative, make things happen, be dominant in their 1v1 situations. And yeah, that's for me. I think if any fan sees that, I think that straight away you create a little bit of a bond with that person, that affiliation.
Yeah,
and they're the boys that have come through the academy that we feel that they've had that background. Specifically, when parents have sort of left them to it and sort of just been a support mechanism for them, rather than being someone that wants it more than the player.
Yeah,
when they're a support mechanism and they don't push, they get their son to ask questions and show that desire, it's a lot more intrinsic.
Cool. So is it also the case with younger players? You're trying to convince a 12-year-old to join Wimbledon instead of Fulham. When you point to Fulham, point to that 18-man match day squad, how many kids have come through the academy into that team? It's Stephen Sesniel, isn't it? Or whatever his name is. The remaining Sesniel, maybe one. You look at our match day 18, there's five or six players who have come from the academy in every squad, not because we have to, but because they deserve to be. So that must help swing people. You look at, even players who aren't in the first team squad, and they still have Jack Madeline, Archie Proctor on the verge of it. And you've got Jack Rodoni, who's put in some fantastic performances. Even Will Nightingale, obviously, you know, from some time ago. They can see their path from being a 12-year-old playing under-13s football to being a League One footballer playing away at Sunderland. It must be that the sell must be slightly easier. I don't know.
Well, yeah, 100%. The last few years since boys have been getting into the first team, when we're trying to promote what we do, naturally there's a clear pathway there. And if you show that hunger and that desire to work and to showcase your talent, then you've got a pathway.
Yeah,
there are each pathway looks slightly different for each individual, and each player needs to recognise that, and we talk them through that. But when we're trying to sell a pathway, it's not just that, Kevin. It's for us. We're trying to create good people as well. So the likeliness of them becoming a footballer is slim. Regardless of what level they're playing at the moment, we want to get them to a level where they can play as high as they can. However, we want to make sure that the boys are good people, so we have a better people make better dons sort of buzz line for all academy players. So you'll see that they go and do the life skills program at the first team games. We don't call it program selling, we call it social and selling skills. So they're communicating with people, they're learning how to sell and socialize. When they're ball boys, we call it a pitch side observation. So we're trying to get them to be up and close with it, and what can they focus and be as close to the action as possible. And if they're in helping Trev out, they're on a first team experience, so they get to go in the change room, they get to see how they interact. They get to see the requirements, any sort of things that players do, any sort of preparation that goes on.
Yeah.
They get to see all of that. And that's a big thing for us. But also, like, the stadium clean up, we've done that for years now. And again, that's a big part of connecting people with the club, because when you've got a connection to something, you're naturally going to work that little bit harder and feel that commitment.
Definitely. So we're going to talk a bit about your career in a minute. But George, do we have questions via social media for James?
Well, we've had a couple of sets of questions sent in, both of which are anonymous, but I get a feeling James will know pretty quickly who they're from.
Okay.
The first question is, who is the best technically gifted coach in the academy?
that would actually be my assistant, Haseeb. He's technically excellent.
Okay, and the second question from this person is, what impact has Frank Thompson have on your career?
I won't answer that one.
safe bet.
Answer in itself, I think. Excellent. So we do have
another person assessing questions. This one is
complete. You said a couple. I thought you meant a couple, like two.
No, a couple of correspondents.
Oh, fair enough.
This person has said anonymous, but they've asked me to say with the opening line, first of all, he would like to thank you for your kind words regarding his influence and guidance as the club's greatest ever coach, greatest ever Welsh coach, I should say, and especially how much he has helped you. And he has two questions for you, this person who's completely anonymous, obviously. Would you rather be 4'5" or 7'7"?
I'm closer to 4'5", so I'll say that.
And finally, from our online correspondents, true or false, your favourite practice game with the boys is the Joe Block game.
It's up there. It's definitely up there.
If only we knew who this person was. But anyway, thank you for whoever that was. Thank you very, very much for sending the questions in. So we've got two games for you, James. I apologise for this. But one of them, George is going to do one of them. So this is the fact game. So, George, would you like to explain to James how this works? Because I've not heard this yet, and I don't want to do it.
So this is going to be, I'm going to give you five players. You can pick a player about, which you will answer questions about. So when you pick a player, there's going to be five facts about the player. One of those facts is going to be incorrect. All you have to do is tell me which fact is wrong. Okay. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay, so the five players you can choose from are Will Nightingale, Anthony Hartigan, Jack Rudoni, Paul Kalambai, and Paul Osu.
I'm going to go with Rudy. I coached him as an under 12, so...
Okay, so Jack Rudoni. Well, that kind of answers the first question. The five facts are he joined the academy at 11 years old. He signed his first pro contract in March 2019. He has had loan spells with Leatherhead and Corinthian Casuals. He made his first league start versus Bristol Rovers. And he got an assist in what could be our final ever goal at King's. Which of those facts is incorrect?
I don't remember him being at Leatherhead. I remember him being at Corinthian Casuals. I'm going to go with that one. I don't think he played at Leatherhead.
That is correct. All the other facts are correct.
Was he at Tonbridge?
He was at Tonbridge and Corinthian Casuals, not Leatherhead.
There you go.
I've been keeping up to date with his career. Yeah.
It's a fair day to go.
I'm glad you have, yeah. Jane, as our other guest, have you got any questions for James as well?
Yeah, go on then. So what... we came up to see some of the under-18s when you were the 18 management. We went up north to see them in the Youth Cups. All the preparation that goes into that, what's the key for you in preparing them for those massive games like that?
First and foremost, for me, it was Robbo did something that was just brilliant. You don't realise how much nerves creep into young players when they're going into games like that. It's not just the stadiums, it's the prestige of the competition. It's for some of them, it'll be the highlight of their career. And what Robbo did was sat them down and said, right, how are you feeling? Do you believe that we can do it? Do you believe that, do you think sometimes we're going to be okay? Sometimes we're going to struggle? Or do you think, no, we're really going to struggle? And that was a big part in checking their mentality and knowing that they're not alone with them feelings, and then bringing them all together. And then the next thing is just having the typical sort of Wimbledon ethos of, like, we don't care if we're underdogs, we're going to go and take the game to you and we're going to compete, we're going to be aggressive. And no matter what, we're not going to back down. And I think that sort of, that was apparent with them cup runs, regardless of who was playing. There was the Alfie Eden quote after Watford saying, we don't care if you're Premier League or Cap 2 or Cap 1, we're Wimbledon, we believe we can beat you. And that for me stands out as a sort of character and mentality that we want to be in play.
Nice. Yeah,
it's nice to see that tradition continue in Wimbledon teams, because it's always been the way throughout the years, obviously, teaching you to suck eggs. But it's nice that continues even in the youth team setup.
They get shown, Chris, they get shown videos when they arrive. They don't just get signed and there's a bit of paper and off you go. They get showed videos that display the history of Wimbledon FC, the rebirth, how it all went wrong. They get shown all of that so they know the purpose of the club. So that, again, it builds that connection, that affiliation.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to see. I'm aware they do that, and I love the fact that we keep doing that. Very important.
But the Youth Cup this year, obviously, we're getting to the Alliance final. It's so good that we've got so many good players and good teams and what appears to be good people as well involved in, from the parents as well. It's fantastic. And I mean, obviously, you look at someone like Leo Castledine moving to Chelsea for a fee that we can't talk about. That's just great. I mean, it's a shame. It's a shame he's not staying with us. But in terms of the long-term success of the academy and the club, that money's going to come in very, very useful. He's a 14-year-old. He's a child. We've sold a child for a lot of money. So obviously you work with him. Did you see him at a very early age thinking, right, this kid is going to be a superstar? Or was it like a more of a gradual thing?
Well, I was fortunate enough to inherit Leo into the 15s group this year. Rob and the coaches that have previously worked with him have done a fantastic job converting him from a centre-back into a centre-midfielder. Which has really shone this year. This season, whenever he's played within his own age group or the age group above, he's been extremely comfortable, quite dominant. The group in itself have had some very strong results against Chelsea, namely, they beat them 4-2. Tottenham, they beat 5-1. So they had a couple of really good results against some top sides. He's been very strong. He made his under-18s debut out in Spain whilst he was still 13. He's done very well. But that group in itself are very strong. We've got a really strong age group there. In fact, we... Five of that group, not including Leo, played an under-18s game in which they were 3-0 up and conceded a last-minute equaliser because their goalkeeper cleared it. It caught the wind and went straight in. They drew 3-3. But we had an average age of 15 that day. Under-18s fixture. So the group are pretty strong.
That's good. That is good. Again, that's good news for the future. Once we start getting back to football, yes, we know it's not that important at the moment, but that's what brings us together. So we are looking at maybe starting the season, if it's going to be October, November, whenever it is. It's great the club have got that. The future in good hands. So, right, thanks for that, James. Now, we're going to play. We've got a few minutes to go. We've got about 8 minutes left of this broadcast. We're going to play another game. So this is also for Jane. So this is the either-or game. So I will give you a choice of answers, okay? And then you just come up with the first answer coming into your head. Who wants to go first, Jane or James?
Go on, Jane. I'll let you go first.
Okay,
thanks.
Jane.
Thanks.
Gentlemen.
You're absolutely fine. Okay. Ready, Jane?
Yeah.
Okay. Lonsdale belt or Van Allen belt?
Lonsdale.
Deep pan or stuffed crust?
Thin and crispy.
Okay, fine. Happy enough, that's fine. Homes under the hammer or a place in the sun? Did you answer? We didn't hear your answer.
Under the hammer.
BBC News or Sky News?
BBC News.
Shorts in the summer or shorts all year round?
In the summer.
Tom Cruise or Johnny Depp?
Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise.
Talk Sport or Sky Sports News?
Talk Sport.
Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Lord of the Rings.
Here's the two important questions. Luton or Watford?
Luton.
Luton. And when you're making tea, what do you put first into the bag? Into the cup, sorry, the bag or the milk?
I must have answered this about 9 times now. Bag first.
Bag first. Excellent. It's a correct answer. Okay.
We need to make sure.
Yeah. You've got to make sure that it's actually the answer you actually really feel. Okay. So, James, you have slightly different questions, okay?
Yeah.
The Van Allen belt, by the way, is a belt of asteroids it's an astronomical question. So, here we go. Ready, James? Jonathan Pearce or Mickey Pearce?
Jonathan Pierce.
Deep pan or staff crust?
Staff crust.
Homes Under the Hammer or Place in the Sun?
Homes Under the Hammer.
BBC News or Sky News?
BBC News.
Shorts in the summer or shorts all year round?
Just the summer. I get far too cold.
Kirsty Gallagher or Natalie Sawyer?
Natalie Sawyer, definitely.
Correct. TalkSport or Sky Sports News?
Sky Sports News.
Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Harry Potter.
And finally, the two big questions, which do have a correct answer. Luton or Watford?
Luton.
Correct, apparently. Or bag first or milk first when you're making tea?
It has to be bag first.
But there are people, James Shea, for example, the Luton Town goalkeeper, who puts the milk in first, which is a disgrace to humanity. But anyway, thank you both for doing that. So we've got 5 minutes left. So we're just going to briefly talk other things. So basically, thank you both for giving up your time and giving us an insight into what you do for the club. But we're going to briefly talk now some news stories. So let's have our favourite news stories of the day. Chris, what is your news story of the day, sir?
Well, I wanted to be a bit brighter. There's an awful lot of background noise.
There is background noise.
It's yes. Stopped. So, desperate to look for some brighter things in the world. I noticed that in up north in Scotland, they have introduced alpaca meetings where owners of alpacas will take alpacas around and go up to your window so you can pet them, which I thought was a lovely story. Rather than the constant alpacas.
Wow.
The ones that spit, I appreciate, but obviously not all the time. they take them up to the front window and you can pet them through the window, so social distancing and all that.
Oh, I like that.
Something a bit different instead of the normal doom and gloom.
My one is good. So I don't know if anyone saw this, but last week Britney Spears claimed to have broken the world 100-meter record.
Yeah.
She said that in her garden she had measured herself running 100 metres in 5.6 seconds. Mm. Then it was discovered that she actually meant 100 feet. but I like the fact that she tweeted, "I've just run 100 metres quicker than Usain Bolt," and she genuinely thought she had.
She should stick to hairdressing, shouldn't she?
Yes. So, George, do you have a story? Is it about football?
Weirdly enough, it is about football.
Okay.
And it's about the news that Sky Sports carried just before we started recording this, actually, saying that they admit there's a danger of losing clubs and leagues as finances collapse. And this is after earlier in the day, Sunderland have announced they're furloughing all their players, academy players and backroom staff.
So is that in line with the same news that the Pope still is a Catholic?
Yes.
And it's bears still defecating wooded areas? Is that somewhere along those lines?
Yes, but it's more about the Popes and bears admitting this is what is happening rather than...
Yes, trying to pretend everything's fine. Yeah.
That's really what the news is.
So the answer is bears are still Catholic and the Pope does still get in the woods. That's good to hear.
And all I'm going to say is I've never seen a bear get baptised and I wouldn't want to either.
No, but
I think we digress somewhat.
We've digressed massively. We do have a birthdays game. We're not going to do that now. But we do have things to do in lockdown. So there's stuff to do, isn't there? So I'm going to mention two things. Fleabag, one of my favourite comedies of the last few years. That's now
You're
available.
Do Fleabag in lockdown?
Yep. And also my friend, Mr. Dr. Simon Elliott, appears on Thursday's show. I'm not sure I'm on Thursday's show. On More 4, there's a programme called The Great British Dig with Hugh Dennis and my friend, Dr. Simon Elliott, in which they discover a... Roman villa under a house in Kent. It's good fun. So I'd recommend watching that. Chris, what are you recommending that people do in the last 30 seconds of this broadcast? Not in the last 30 seconds, during the program.
I'm going to do a do not. If you've never realised that you've got a filter on your cooker, don't look at it now while you're furloughed.
Okay, have you done that?
I've got a 7-year-old filter which I've never known was actually there and I can't get it off the rest of the oven. So don't do that, everyone.
there we go. Things not to do. George.
Things not to do. I've changed it.
This will guarantee George will find something to do with sport. George, what are you recommending people do with their time while in lockdown?
Funnily enough, it is to do with sport.
Hey, I win again!
Fantastic.
And that is tomorrow evening from 9 p.m. on Sky Sports Arena. They are re-showing England's rugby tour of Australia from 2016. So I would recommend watching that on tomorrow evening from 9 p.m.
George, I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen it.
Yeah.
At the time. Yes. I haven't. I'm not a fan of rugby, but anyway.
No spoilers. No spoilers for Ken.
I'm not going to say who won that tour. But no, normally, do we? Thank you very much, Jane Lonsdale. Thanks for your time. Appreciate you giving us insight into all your work with the club. And James Oliver Pearce, thank you very much indeed. And continued success to you both and continued health, of course. Although I am not a fan of the Tory party, I'm not a Conservative voter, I do wish Boris Johnson all the best, and we all do. We hope he recovers.
100%.
Get back to leading the country. There's been some horrific things in the social media today about that. I've never voted Tory, but God's sake, we need this guy to get better and help us through this. So, tomorrow's show, we have Robin Bedford, otherwise known as Rocket, and Trevor Williams, and we'll be talking about the behind-the-scenes stuff. You'll find more about folding kit than you ever want to know in your life. So thanks for joining us. Well, I think so. I think it's fantastic. So thanks for joining us. Nick and Stu back tomorrow, and maybe me. I don't know. I think I'm on. But thanks indeed for your time. Stay safe. Stay indoors as much as you can, and we'll hear from you soon, and you'll hear from us soon. Thank you.